Hello and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast by Opus Partners. I'm your host, Stephen Knight.
I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And to the show, we're talking about, is Adrian Orr the worst Reserve Bank governor ever? Now, I must admit, this was Matt Gilligan from Gilligan Road Associates' idea, not Ed McKnight's idea.
Yeah, I thought you loved Adrian Orr, Ed.
Well, I mean, I'm potentially more of a fan than Matt, but we're going to dig into it. Now, Adrian Orr, a bit of a controversial governor. Matt, why is or is Adrian Orr the worst Reserve Bank governor ever?
Well, I think he has made a giant inflationary mistake, and that is in response to the pandemic. He pumped the property market to a historic high, and he did it for no good reason. You know, he dropped interest rates to the lowest I've seen them in my lifetime, and everybody said, oh my goodness, property's coming through the roof. They're stuck at home. Suddenly they had loose credit conditions. They had historically low interest rates, and unsurprisingly, house prices got pumped through the roof. And then only 2 years later, when he realized his huge mistake and the inflationary impact, he dumped the property market on its head by pushing interest rates through the roof. He said, we need a recession. Well, we only needed a recession because he pushed house prices so high and created all the inflation in the market. So I say that this is his mistake. He's fixing it now. And now in 2024, he's grinding New Zealand households with high interest rates. He's grinding New Zealand businesses doing structural damage, pushing companies out of business because, you know, we're in recession, and it does structural damage. People just up sticks and leave and go to Australia. They close their business because they don't have the liquidity or the cash flow to survive. And the sole reason why the market conditions are prevailing are because Adrian Orr, for whatever reason, oversteered the market, pushed interest rates too low. And now, having realized his inflationary mistake, he's pushed interest rates too high. He's holding them too high, too long. It's terrible for New Zealand.
But Matt, if I was Adrian Orr here, and I was, Adrian Orr. If I was him, what did I say? But Matt, you know, you can only say that with the benefit of hindsight. Like if I took you back to the middle of the pandemic, that Reserve Bank came out with a policy of least regrets where they say we're going to run the risk of taking interest rates too low because we're worried about what happens if we don't respond enough. So it's all very well to sit here in 2024 and say, oh, he took interest rates too low and now he's had to take them too high. But if you went back then, back to 2020, maybe that was the best decision. How would you respond to that line of thinking?
I'd say that his role as Reserve Bank governor is to be the steady hand on the financial tiller of the country. He didn't need to go so fast and so hard. He could have dropped the OCR halfway, you know, halfway down. And he could have kept the credit criteria for LVRs at maybe 75% or 70% rather than pushing all the way up to 80. And seeing how that liquidity helped the financial conditions of the economy. And if it wasn't enough, then he would leave some powder dry. He could put some more liquidity in or some more stimulus with dropping the interest rates further. But just throwing the kitchen sink at the economy, it's not prudent macroprudential control. It's not the steady hand on the tiller that I would expect of a Reserve Bank governor.
Okay, and if I was sitting here as Adrian Orr again, not to challenge
he's
you too much.
He's overdriving the market. He's having too much impact on the market. You know, you turn the rudder on a yacht 45 degrees, the boat spins around. You move it 5 degrees and it corrects its course. You shouldn't be oversteering the economy.
But if I was Adrian Orr sitting here, I'd say to you, though, well, I had to take interest rates low because everybody else took interest rates low. And the issue is that if everyone else in the world drops their interest rates and I don't, our interest rates are relatively high. That means investors will want to bring their capital over here and invest in New Zealand because we've got higher interest rates. That increases demand for the New Zealand dollar, which will push our dollar higher. If our dollar is more expensive, then it's going to be more expensive for our farmers to export their goods. And that could mean that our farmers and our exporters don't do as well. And so I had to take interest rates a bit lower because everyone else in the world was doing it. What do you think about that line of logic that if I was Adrian Orr, I'd probably give to you?
Yep. And totally fair to talk about the exchange rate and the impact on our exports. But at the same time, you've also got to balance the damage that inflation is going to do to the economy. And so, where is the balance? Is it to throw the kitchen sink at the economy? Did he need to go all the way down? I was having conversations with my 9-year-old at the time because I talked to my kids about the economy a lot.
I love that. 9 years old. What would you do if you were a Reserve Bank governor?
Sitting just trying to have their breakfast.
No, actually, digressing, I bought my kids houses over that period because it was so obvious that it was going to cause a massive amount of house price inflation. And I wanted my kids in 10 years to be able to sell houses that I bought for them while they're young. They're meaning to do it for a long time. And so actually the driver for it was Adrian Orr, because it was so obvious that the house price inflation was going to explode. So when I say my 9-year-old knew about it, because that was the driver of the investment.
And I think what this shows as well is you can have arguments both way, and those arguments can sound really reasonable. And the question really just comes down to the balancing side of where you come down to it. You do make a really good point.
Well, here's a question for you. How much were we exporting over that period with the gates closed?
Oh, you've got Ed by the looks of that face.
I don't have that stat.
He gives that answer to me.
Because I was exporting and importing from New Zealand because I have a PPE business, and I had to charter a plane with special permissions to get anything through the gate. So I'm not sure that our export economy was that vibrant at that time because our borders were closed.
And it's really interesting kind of thinking about some of the people like your kids who have benefited from some of Adrian Orr's heavy-handedness with interest rates, but it really has hurt people on the other hand and sort of at the other side of it. Number of times that I'm opening up the MBR during the day and seeing someone's gone broke or someone's shutting down or, you know, warehouse selling off more of their different businesses. Who in your mind are the people that have won out of this and who are the people that have lost?
I've won out of it. So I unreservedly thank Adrian Orr for his lack of prudence and his behaviour. And I'd also thank Grant Robertson. You know, those guys held hands and enriched Matthew Gilligan. I was very grateful to both of them.
I think the New Zealand Property Academy podcast listeners will be thankful that you've benefited out of it.
Yeah, the second parties that benefited from it were Opus Partners. I'm pretty sure they sold about 500 properties or 700 properties during that time. So, you know, everybody in the property sector has made a lot of money over that time. Those that could see what was happening sold out in 2021, which I did. You know, I'm a buy and hold investor and I cashed up. I went too early. I thought the assets didn't make sense in value at the end of 2020, so I sold a bunch of assets. And then in 2021, sold a bunch more, cashed up, the market's crashed, now we're buying back in. So people that look long-term in property and see the cycles and exit at the peak and buy back in the trough. So I think the old school are doing really well out of what Adrian Orr's done because they've got the experience and the capital to play the long game. The people that have lost, unfortunately, are the new home buyers, the newbies who managed to scrape up a deposit and go in with low equity on interest rates at 2.5. Suddenly they're breaking their fixed interest contracts out into 8%. They don't have the cash flow and their assets are in negative equity territory. So, yeah, that's what I really don't like about it. He's hurt a bunch of people at the bottom end that shouldn't have been hurt. A steadier hand on the financial tiller would have meant that they would have had a better entry into the property market. I don't want 20% growth year on year and then minus 40% or, you know, minus 25% over 2 years. I want a steady 5, 6, or 7% over 10 years. And what that delivers is it delivers continuous employment, stability, confidence. And we don't have that. And it's squarely on Adrian Orr.
So if you were Adrian Orr, where to from here? How do you fix where we are at the moment?
I actually think he's done a positive thing with DTIs. I think that is an excellent thing because what DTI is going to let them do is decrease cost of living by dropping interest rates, but tighten up on credit using debt-to-income ratios. So if interest rates are 7.5 and there's no DTIs and you drop interest rates down to 4.5, house price inflation, speculation, it all fires up again. He'll be criticised severely for allowing the inflation to creep back in. DTIs will allow him to drop the DTI ratio as he drops interest rates, which means he'll be able to bring the interest rate reductions in earlier than otherwise expected. So I think it's a positive thing from the bank. And I don't see that in the media. People don't seem to be talking about that much, that one of the positive impacts of DTIs is you'll be able to control, you know, the credit conditions in a much more effective way and possibly drop interest rates more aggressively without spiking.
I think that was one of the things that you said at Steve's presentation that Ed and I have been harping on for a while. The introduction of DTIs right now would have zero impact on people's lending ability with today's interest rates. So if they're signalling that they're going to bring it out mid this year, it makes me think that, well, maybe interest rates might come down a little bit faster than perhaps they're forecasting.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think will happen. And that will be welcome relief. Yep.
So, Matt, if I make you the Reserve Bank governor for a day or for the next year, not that you might like to take it.
Doesn't pay enough.
When would you start cutting interest rates?
Well, I'd bang DTIs in, and which you rightly say is going to have very little impact other than those that are at the margins. I think it's less than 20% of investor lending is above 7-to-1, so 80% is below 7-to-1 at the moment. So you drop interest rates down, you drop DTIs down, you're constricting credit. You're in a much better position as a Reserve Bank governor with that tool in place. So when would I do it? As soon as possible. New Zealand's hurting. We, as accountants, have a front row seat to what's going on in the economy, because the clients are coming in saying, oh, we can't pay our bills, you know, we must have closed business. And we're seeing a lot of people migrate to Australia. A GP the other day went to Australia. She was paid double and worked, didn't have to do weekend work. And I think that's true for teachers, policemen. They get paid better over there. So the structural damage that's being done of having high interest rates and creating a recession is really bad. We get a brain drain accelerated to get away from it. So the faster we can get interest rates down, the better. We've got to stop this recession.
The counter argument to that, of course, is that if we drop interest rates immediately, for example, then you'd likely see inflation stay relatively high. We're currently sitting at about 4.7% inflation, and it is coming down. I mean, the Reserve Bank's own forecast suggests that inflation should be under 3% by September. Don't you think that if we drop interest rates too soon, that inflation stays around too long?
Well, I think house price inflation is a big part of that, and DTIs are going to curtail the amount of credit availability, which will constrain inflation. I think there's a link, because the credit is where a lot of the consumption spending comes from. So if you curtail the amount of credit that is available, then it's a whole lot less riskier to drop interest rates. And I'm not an economist. I think it's just a common sense observation. You're the economist, do you tell me?
That's what everybody says. I go into interviews and this, you know, you kind of dance around someone's question a bit because the answer's a bit hard. And then they say, well, you're the economist, tell me. I had that on Radio New Zealand.
You just do what you normally do and just make something up and hope for the best.
You can't tell people the truth there, Andrew.
Well, Ed, do you agree with me that DTIs are going to allow them to drop rates faster?
Not really, and I'll tell you the reason why. Because if we think about how inflation is made up, I haven't checked the calculations recently, but my understanding is that house prices themselves don't play into the CPI inflation indicator. Rents do, rates do, and a lot of other household costs do, but not necessarily house prices themselves. So you can start to limit house price increases, but that won't necessarily decrease the consumer price index, which is the main indicator that the Reserve Bank looks at.
One thing I would say, though, is normally if people's houses are going up in value, we feel richer and then we spend more as well, though.
Yeah, well, that would be an argument for having house prices come down even further. But we've just said that DTIs won't have any impact on house prices, so that argument is moot.
No, it's not just the house price inflation or deflation. It's the availability of credit. People will borrow to spend.
Yes.
And that's the point. The DTIs constrain the amount of liquidity available to borrow to spend. And that's what I think allows deflationary pressure from them while you simultaneously drop interest rates. Because you're stopping the grind of the households, which is creating a lot of damage in the economy, structural damage. But at the same time, you're constraining the amount of credit available.
Fantastic. Let's wrap it up there. But please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. It really does help us get the message out to more people. And Matt, where can people find out more about you and Gilligan Rowan Associates?
Look us up at www.gra.co.nz. We've got lots of videos on there on tax and legal structures. And if you'd like to make contact, just click the button on the website to book an interview.
For listening to the Property Academy podcast by Opus Partners. I'm your host, Stephen Knight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
We're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.